Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Royal Oak, Michigan is Stephen Shaver. Stephen is with the law firm of Wachler & Associates. And Stephen is the author of Revenue Cycles, CARES Act Relief Funds for the Complete Healthcare Compliance Manual. Stephen, first, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today and for writing the article.
Thank you for having me, Adam.
Our pleasure. Now, a lot of money has been made available through the CARES Act, including $175 billion just for healthcare providers. But you know, it's important to remember it's not a blank check. What are the key restrictions for receiving and using the funds?
The most important restrictions on a payment under the Provider Relief Fund is probably on the use of the funds themselves. Specifically, providers are required to use the payment only to prevent, prepare for, and respond to coronavirus. They can only use the payment to reimburse themselves for healthcare-related expenses or lost revenue that are attributable to the coronavirus. Providers are also restricted from using the payment toward an expense that either another funding source has already reimbursed or that another funding source is required to reimburse. And HHS has actually released a lot of guidance on how to calculate these expenses, what expenses qualify, and in what order they are counted.
So obviously there's a lot of temptation there that needs to be avoided. Now, what are some of the common compliance risks for providers who accept a pandemic relief fund payment?
That's a good question, Adam. And before I answer, let me just say that this is meant to be informative, in my opinion. It's not intended to be legal advice, and I haven't reviewed any specific set of facts prior to discussing this with you today. Common compliance risks would be poor documentation and commingling of the funds that were received from the Provider Relief Fund. Just about every provider who received a payment will have to file a report with the Department of Health and Human Services, and many are likely to be audited as well. So when the time comes to file that report, and in the event that a provider is audited, that paper trail will be important to demonstrate compliance with the terms of the fund.
So once again, as we hear so often when it comes to compliance, document, document, document. Now, how can compliance teams help manage these risks?
Absolutely. Document, document, document is a very important component. Providers should also make sure and the compliance departments to coordinate with accounting and financial folks to implement those internal controls and mechanisms to make sure not only that the funds are being documented, but that they were being used appropriately to begin with. Also, recipients should review the terms and conditions of the payment in detail. The terms and conditions are generally several pages long, and in addition to the terms that you might expect to find, there are also some terms that you may not expect, like the prohibition on using the funds for, quote, any project that entails the capture or procurement of chimpanzees obtained from the wild, and also some restrictions on executive compensation.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I think we're all used to clicking in life through terms and conditions. I know in business we're more prudent about that, but it certainly shows the value of making sure you understand exactly what's in the documentation. So when something goes wrong, which inevitably it may, there's always a scramble to make things right. But is there anything that compliance teams and the organizations they work for should absolutely not do in these kinds of situations? You know, aside from the obvious of covering up, what I mean is, what are some of the mistakes to avoid?
Probably the biggest mistake to avoid is discounting the enforcement authority behind the Provider Relief Fund. A lot of providers are used to operating with a contractor of one sort or another, looking over their shoulder, checking the paperwork. In this case, it's more than that. Not only do providers have to file these reports, and there will likely be audits, but in the beginning, when the providers were required to certify their compliance with the terms and conditions, HHS has indicated that that certification was material to the government paying out these funds, which may tee up liability under the False Claims Act. In addition, the government has promised lots of enforcement of the large sums of money that have been given out, in addition to the HHS Office of the Inspector General. The Department of Justice is going to be looking into it. They've actually already issued one indictment related to the Provider Relief Fund, and Congress has also established the Special Inspector General for Provider Relief, a special agency dedicated to looking at all of the trillions of dollars that the government has given out. And they have said that they will specifically target high dollar amounts and high risk conduct and entities. Now, not to sound overly scary with all of that, but it is an unknown because the situation is still playing itself out.
Yeah, and I imagine it will continue to play itself out, and will likely, like in any time when the government is spending a large amount of money, there's going to be a large number of fraudsters who emerge to take advantage of this, in addition to good organizations making bad choices. Now, earlier on, you mentioned the reporting requirements for the relief funds. What is the current state of the PRF reporting requirements?
That's actually a great question, Adam. The short answer is that we don't know. The long answer is that the CARES Act itself and some of the early terms and conditions actually required that any provider who received at least $150,000 from the Provider Relief Fund would be required to report quarterly on their use of the funds. And the CARES Act left the filing of reports by other entities who received less than $150,000 up to HHS to decide what the reporting requirements would be. The first set of those quarterly reports would have been due last July. However, HHS said afterward that they would only be requiring one annual report for all recipients, one for 2020 and one for 2021. The 2020 reports would have been due back on February 15, 2021. However, in January, actually prior to the change in administration, HHS pushed that date back and has not given a new date. At this point, providers can register in the reporting portal, but they cannot yet submit the reports. So we are expecting HHS to release some form of guidance on the reporting in addition to a due date at some point in the future.
So definitely much yet to come in terms of enforcement, in terms of learning what expectations are and seeing where companies are going right and where they're going wrong. Well, Stephen, thank you for sharing those insights with us both here and in the Complete Healthcare Compliance Manual. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.